We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Thank you, Joshua. I'm Dave Cohen. Now back to Tommy Tucker on WWL.
We're getting ready to talk about the Mars rover and space in general. And in the second half hour, we'll talk about the rise in unaccompanied minors at the border. But, Dave, you know, the four astronauts are going to fly aboard that SpaceX mission by the end of the year. Bunch of private citizens, no space experience.
Yeah, there's civilians.
One's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Huh?
Civilians.
Well, one's a billionaire, yeah, another a healthcare provider. Third will be selected at random through a sweepstakes. And that last seat will go to the winner of a competition.
Yeah, the healthcare provider is from Baton Rouge. She's a cancer survivor and a physician's assistant. And she's really excited about helping raise money for St. Jude's as part of her trip into outer space.
A very good cause indeed. But I wanted to ask you, would you
absolutely
do this? Would you want
100%.
Really?
I, as a child, I always dreamt of being an astronaut. I had hoped. Back when they used to have a program where journalists could go to outer space as part of standard procedure, they ended that before I had an opportunity. And then I started having kids, and I didn't want to do it while I had small children. But all my kids are grown now, so someone wants to send me to outer space, I'm there. I'm going.
See, the problem is I had an MRI one time, and they put that cage on your head, and they put me in the thing, and I opened my eyes, and I started screaming like a little schoolgirl. It was very ugly.
Yeah, maybe it's not.
Very, very embarrassing. And my fear would be they would be at 5, 4, and then I'd start screaming, wanting to get out of there, and I couldn't. So you can have my place if ever that happens. All right,
Well, if you earn a spot, let me know, because... Yeah, no, I always wanted to go to outer space. I'm fascinated by it. I know the discussion and the debate over the expense and the cost and if it's worth it. But to me, it's buying dreams, and it's allowing us to move forward with our knowledge as a society, and it's neat stuff.
Truth be told, I'd probably start screaming like a little schoolgirl a lot earlier than 10, probably right when they close that door. Thank you, Dave. We're joined now by John Logsdon, Professor Emeritus at George Washington's University and founder of GW Space Policy Institute. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
I am well. Good morning.
Would you go to space? Would you like to do that?
Probably not. And I'm 83. I'm even older than John Glenn when he flew the second time. And I'm a little claustrophobic. So, and, you know, there's no wine up there. There's no good parties.
Mm-hmm. You get that part about the claustrophobia with the screaming like a little schoolgirl, don't you? The first core stage of NASA's next generation rocket left the Michoud place in New Orleans, out in the east. I'm trying to think about how long ago this was. Last Wednesday, maybe? And was headed... First part of the Artemis rocket is the bottom line on all of this. It was early in January. Let's talk about the rover and Mars and what it is that we hope to gain from that and why it's worth the money.
Well, I mean, the Perseverance rover is a kind of multidimensional thing. Probably the most exciting part of it is it will collect samples for eventual return to Earth, where one can use advanced laboratory techniques to see whether there was ever life on Mars. So, but that's 15 years in the future, the return of the samples. there is this little helicopter called Ingenuity, which is at sometime in the next couple of weeks going to detach from the rover and see whether it can fly around the Martian surface. And that'll be cool because it has a good camera on it. And then there's an experiment to see whether you can produce oxygen from the Mars atmosphere, which is largely carbon dioxide, which would support humans on Mars sometime in the future. And then there's all the geology work that the rover is doing. So if you think, if one thinks that exploring the solar system is something worth doing, then the funds spent on Perseverance are certainly being well spent.
I hope this is not a terribly dumb question, but what would we gain by knowing if there was life on Mars that would help us in the future?
Well, it would help us understand our place in the cosmos, in the universe. I think all of us have said, are we alone? Is the human species the only intelligent species in the solar system, in this universe, in all the universes beyond? So it's really a philosophical question, that knowing that life emerged on the next planet out would answer. I mean, scientifically, I don't think it's practically, it's not going to make life better on Earth, but it's the sort of thing that makes life worth living, is understanding things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it wasn't that dumb of a question after all, then. Where does the private sector fit into this in terms of future space exploration? And is it cheaper for the government to do it with that private-public partnership?
Well, yeah. SpaceX only so far has reduced the cost of access to space by demonstrating that you can reuse rockets. I think that's a key to the future, is lowering costs so that more people can go to space. So that's an important development. Elon Musk with SpaceX, Jeff Bezos with Blue Origin, have committed to spend some of their wealth on space exploration. And so it may well be that the first people on the moon or Mars are sent there by SpaceX, not by NASA. I don't think that will happen, but it's a possibility. So I think the more people involved, the more funds available, the better off we are in carrying out these programs.
Right, let me take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the future of space travel and also the Artemis Project, and why is it important that we go back to the moon, and what is it that we could learn this time that we couldn't in the past. We're talking about space travel. John Logsdon's our guest, Professor Emeritus at George Washington University, founder of GW Space Policy Institute, U.S. recently landing another rover on Mars. We've talked about what we hope to learn, and is spending on space a good investment? Tommy Tucker back in a flash here on WWL. 9:21 now. We're talking to Professor John Logsdon, a professor emeritus at George Washington University and founder of GW Space Policy Institute. Professor, what differences between the Trump administration and the Biden administration in terms of, I guess, the priorities of space travel?
So far, there aren't any major differences. Trump left the space program in pretty good shape. Mr. Biden has already indicated he's going to keep the Space Force and going to proceed with the project to return the NASA cliche now, first woman and next man to the moon, mm-hmm. Project Artemis, going to go forward with that. Exactly on what schedule, I think, remains to be seen.
Why are we going to the moon again? What can we accomplish? What can we learn that we were not able to learn back in the 60s?
Well, first of all, Apollo, the six landings on the moon, went to only very small areas on the total lunar surface. So, you know, there's a lot more of the moon to be explored. There is the stronger than belief, probably the understanding that there are some valuable resources, in particular ice, frozen water, that could be used to support future exploration. That's kind of a circular argument. But if we're going to continue to send humans beyond Earth orbit, having a source of rocket fuel would be a good thing, and that ice could be turned into rocket fuel. There's other valuable, potentially valuable resources on the moon. The backside of the moon that never faces the Earth is a great place for astronomy, for looking deep into the cosmos. So there's lots of reasons. Plus, it's a stepping stone to the eventual expansion of the human species into the solar system.
You really see that happening? That's our future?
I'm frankly not sure what will happen. It could happen. Again, I mentioned Elon Musk earlier. Elon wants to build a million-person city on Mars, which is a pretty bravado vision. But the moon could turn out to be a place like Antarctica, where there are a few thousand people living there year-round and more scientists there during the Antarctic summer. So I think we're going to back to explore to find out whether that's our future or not.
That'd be something to get a million people on Mars, I'll tell you that. When it comes to the president and dealing with the various congresses, which, you know, change majority, minority, et cetera, is it hard to get, has Congress for the most part been on board with the space program, or are they more concerned about what's going on the ground in their own districts? And I'll follow that up with how hard is it to maintain a cohesive space program, budgeting, et cetera, if the Congress is changing constantly?
Well, you say Congress is concerned with what's happening in their districts. Well, NASA's money is spent in their districts. Mm-hmm. And so a healthy NASA is of interest to those Congress people, including those in your area who have large NASA facilities.
Definitely our area.
Michu is large, and you have the Stennis Space Center, which is where the SLS core will be tested just across the border in Mississippi. So there's been, on the basis of constituent interest, support for the NASA budget, which, after all, is less than 0.5% of the overall government budget. It sounds like a lot of money, but it's, you know, compared to lots of other things, it's not a lot of money. There is a sense of leadership, a sense that the United States, as the leading country in the world, should be pushing frontiers, including space. And it's something that this country should be doing.
Should we be cooperating with other countries or competing with them?
Well, we are cooperating. The International Space Station is a 15-country partnership. Artemis, the project to go back to the moon, has several entities. The European Space Agency, Canada, Japan have already indicated they want to participate. Our robotic science missions are all international in character. The real issue underlying what you just asked is, should we compete or cooperate with the two other major space-faring countries, Russia and, in the 21st century, particularly China? Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult question. It's really a political question. Or you could use space as a symbol of positive relationships, or you could use space as an arena for conflict. And that gets embedded in the broader geopolitical relationships between this country and other major countries.
I presume there would be some proprietary technology specific to each country that would have military applications as well?
Well, I mean, first of all, there's a lot of military activity in space, and it's a kind of separate but important issue is how we defend our space assets against potential threats. But yes, there is indeed sensitive technology that has to be protected. And even in the space station partnership, which began back in the 80s, a technology control plan, so to block unwanted transfer of technology, was part of the arrangement. So we know how to do that.
What about military presence, superiority in space? Is that something that the Joint Chiefs get together or whatever in the bowels of the Pentagon? That's an active discussion of, you know, that's the next frontier, or it sounds cliche to say that, but we have to have a military advantage in space, and that should drive some of this as well?
Well, I mean, this is an area where Mr. Trump talked a lot about dominance, space dominance, and having a military superiority. And he created in December of 2019 a separate new military service called the United States Space Force, which is in existence and developing now 2 years or a year and a half in. So, yes, we've made the use of space central to our ability to fight and win military conflicts and using those assets, planning for how they are going to be used is an important element of military strategy.
So is there a scenario under which we would fight a war with Russia or China or whomever over whatever in space?
Well, there are two scenarios that relate to what you just said. One is that certain assets in space, like global positioning satellites, our intelligence satellites, communication satellites, military communication satellites, are essential to the conduct of military operations on land, sea, and air. So if they were attacked by an adversary, we would defend them. And defense could include actively attacking their assets or some other form of military activity. That's further downstream, if indeed U.S. operators are, let's say, mining valuable resources on the moon or had an outpost in orbit or in space that was attacked by an adversary, we would have to defend it. So the idea, you know, we're not anywhere near Star Wars yet, but the idea of military conflict in space is something very real and hopefully to be avoided.
In terms of junk in space and how crowded it is up there, is that a legitimate concern? And is there any way to clean that up?
Very much so. I mean, the U.S. tracks 25,000 pieces of space debris over 4 inches, 10 centimeters. If one of those pieces of debris hits an operating satellite, that satellite's going to have a bad day. So, the first step is to stop creating debris. And the second is to maybe find ways of actively removing it, of mitigation. That's under discussion in the space community. Nothing's happened yet, but it's an idea that's under active discussion of can we do it, should we do it, who's going to pay for it, who owns the junk, who has salvage rights. So there are a whole set of questions regarding space debris that are very much on the agenda of the international space community.
What about hacking in terms of computer-guided spacecraft, whatever? Is there a way to make that hack-proof, or is there any way somebody, a bad actor on the ground, could get control of something that they shouldn't have?
Answer to the last question is yes. Possibility of cyber attacks on our space systems is very real, and therefore very much of a concern of cybersecurity, preventing attacks, electronic attacks on our system. So, it's something that we didn't think very much about until the past, let's say, 6 or 10 years. But now it's very much a concern when put up particularly a sensitive system that it is somehow protected against cyber attack.
Has it happened, Professor?
Probably. Yeah. We don't talk about it very much, but
I think the jury can take that as a yes. Anything you want to add, Professor, before we let you go?
Well, I think it's an exciting time. The landing Perseverance certainly was exciting. Hopefully, this next test of the first stage of the SLS rocket will happen soon and be successful, and we'll be back on our way to resuming human exploration. We haven't been off this planet more than a few hundred miles since 1972, and it's time to go back.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. Hope you have a good day.
Okay, take care.
John Loxton, Professor Emeritus at George Washington University and founder of GW Space Policy Institute. And it's interesting when I asked him if it had happened, if satellites or whatever had been hacked, and it definitely seemed like the answer was yes, but he didn't feel comfortable saying that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the rise in unaccompanied minors at the border, which could create a crisis on the border. And what is Joe Biden, as it's been said, in the process of completely dismantling whatever President Trump accomplished on the border? It is 9:34. That's time for traffic now on WWL.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.